just started to pose this question of what exactly does Hiddur Mitzvah aim to accomplish? You recall that we noted there's a pasuk Zekeli V'Anveihu, which the Gemara Masechet Shabbos understands, among other interpretations, as a directive to do mitzvos behidr, his noyel fun of the mitzvos. And our Gemara Masechet Sukkah and Dafir Aleph also quotes that in the context of lulav tzarech egen. So among the details we tried to figure out were, what is the goal of such a hiddur? Is it something about how we behave? Is it something that we want to show our enthusiasm? So it's similar to other concepts, such as perhaps Zrizin Makdim in the Mitzvos, or Mitzvah Bo Yolstom Yibishlucho. And parenthetically, in all of these, one could ask if that's really what's going on, but it's a fair position to take for now, that there are a number of ideas in halacha which are about showing that we are enthusiastic, and maybe that's what's going on. Or should we say that no, that the reason we want to do mitzvot in a beautiful way, and in this sense the meaning of the phrase hisnoya lefonav b'mitzvos, is that we understand that human nature is that we are attracted to appealing things. And when you see a nice building, you see a nice religious object that's made out of silver or gold, whatever it is, it conveys to you a certain importance of that thing, and therefore it brings glory to what it represents. So this is an idea which many religions have, and in this case it doesn't seem to be a foreign idea, but in many religions we have the idea that the religious center should be the most impressive building, and you find this in halacha as well. So, again, we have our token architectural experts here. So, is this not correct? Right, so, if that's the idea, so we are building on this concept that we should try to impress people with the religious items. So, we mentioned it would have a nafkamina, for example, in the question of what obligation of hiddur is there if what we do is not going to be seen. So let's say we're talking about the parshios of tefillin shel yad. I focus on tefillin shel yad, by the way, because it's double covered up, because the parshios are inside, and the tefillin shel yad themselves, even the outsides, are worn under the sleeve. So it's doubly covered up from vision. So what about that? Is there an inyan of hiddur in that sense? So we saw that was the machlokas harishonim, and it seems to revolve around this issue. Should just also ask you to take note that, so our goal, our agenda was for today to kind of continue this phase, and then for Monday to get into the specific Hanukkah applications. I want to emphasize that the Hanukkah applications are going to draw heavily from this discussion. So please keep in mind that some of what we're going to discuss today, we're going to need to take from when we get into the details about Hanukkah. Okay. So this is a question one could ask. And this question we suggested was maybe relevant to understanding the Ritva, that the Ritva says Hiddur Mitzvah has to be Drabanan, because if it was Minat Torah, it would have to be Ma'akev. He's working off the premise that Dinei Torah are always crucial, are always Ma'akev. So we wondered if perhaps you could say that maybe it's not so conclusive here, because maybe the fact that Hiddur Mitzvah, even if we accept the premise that Daraisa Dinim are always Ma'akev, but maybe the fact that Hiddur Mitzvah by Elulav here is not Ma'akev, maybe that doesn't necessarily mean that it's not Doraisa. Maybe it means it's a different concept, that maybe it's not from the halachos of Lulav, maybe it's from the halachos of how we do mitzvos in general. It belongs in the Shulchan Aruch, like in Siman Aleph, where it tells you to, the first Siman Aleph of Aruch Hayim, where we're told to get up quickly in the morning and kum lavoros habore. So maybe it belongs there, all the principles of enthusiasm in mitzvos. And therefore, it's not really about any specific mitzvah. And if it's missing, then the chisaron is in Siman Aleph in Aruch Hayim. The Chisaron is not in Hilchos Lulav, perhaps. So this also could perhaps be the issue, or be contained on some level, in a Machlokas, Rashi and Tosfos in Bava Kamma and Daf Tes. By the way, how are you guys all caught up in the Marmakomas? How did you do today? Pretty much, more or less. So you saw the Rashi and Tosfos in Bava Kamma and Daf Tes. And so there, the Gemara has a phrase, we started to say this yesterday, that Hidr Mitzvah is only expected up to a shlish, up to a fraction of the original investment. So that was, as we mentioned then, that was really the understanding of Rashi. Rashi understands that that's what shlish means. That if you have an expense, if you have a kosher item, and you have the option of getting a more mahudr one, you'll go for the more mahudr one if the expense is only one third more. But Tosfos understands it differently. How does Tosfos understand it? Oh, right? So what does Tosfos say exactly? That, let's say,
Eggos.
Right? That's nuts.
That's
right.
Larger,
right?
If it's less than one third larger, you should get the
one. Okay. So it's interesting, right? That here you have Tosfos kind of shifting the focus, and Rashi was talking about a Sefer Torah, right? So Tosfos had to change the focus to an esrog, perhaps because it fits his model better. That he makes it a matter of size.
So,
because we don't know that a bigger Sefer Torah is more mahudr. Maybe you could say that it is, but the idea of size as hidr, we find most clearly in esrog concepts. Yes, sir?
Is using esrog as our example a problem, in the sense that esrog in itself is something that is intrinsically mahudr, it needs to be mahudr, right? Creates adar, as opposed to other things that, you know, maybe not. You know, you fill in, it's kosher if it's not most mahudr. You know, it's very nice to be mahudr, but when it comes to an esrog, or even lulav, as we've seen, if it's not mahudr, if it's dried up, it's not kosher at all.
Okay, so you're right to suspect that something's up in terms of that, but it doesn't have to bother us here, because here, to use this for an example, so we can pick an example, even if there may indeed be some type of conceptual difference. When we're looking at a source, we have to worry, is the source more limited because of a difference here? But to invoke it as an example, that much we can get away with, and we'll discuss your issue in a few minutes. Yes, sir?
Can we have those just using that sort of the very straightforward, like, really small strokes, not going to make it,
okay, they may be connected. You know, the idea that it's just a easy case to use because size works in both senses of the word as an easy indicator. So seems to fit from both angles. So either way, though, it's interesting because what's the difference between Rashi and Tosfos? So essentially, Rashi says it's about how much money you spend. You have to spend more up to a certain degree. And Tosfos is saying that it's about, in this case, let's say size. And the question is, how much bigger do you have to go for? Which apparently seems to suggest that even if the slightly bigger one costs much more, you may still have such an inyan. Yes, sir?
Is it possible that Rashi and Tosfos see it the same way and just, you know, say that, like, they both are under the same assumption that the larger the esrog, the more expensive it should cost, and therefore, like, but because it's larger, you have to buy it even though it's more.
Yes, but the assumption is that it's going to cost more, but we don't necessarily have a reason to assume that it's going to be proportionate to its size to that degree. Now, why doesn't Tosfos just say, like Rashi, it's a simpler metric? Right? You know, why convert it to something else? Harrison?
If it's back and forth, I guess you're the reason for it.
Oh, how'd you figure that out? Yes, go on. Right.
That Rashi is going for the same thing, like, for, like,
okay.
Oh,
I think you're very much on the right track. You want to say a few more words to explain it even more, but I think you basically got it. I'll expand on what you're saying, but I think Harrison pretty much has it exactly. Right? That, at least as we're understanding here, that Rashi is using a measure of how much you literally invest in it, how much you you're taking of yourself and putting into this. So does it cost you this much or does it cost you that much? Which might not, hopefully, if you're a person with any kind of modesty, hopefully nobody else is going to know. Right? The guy sitting next to you in shul, I hope, is not going to know how much extra you spent on your esrog. So really, it reflects, on the one hand, just your commitment to the process, your investment in the mitzvah, and the only one who's going to be aware of it is the Ribono Shel Olam. So that's more about what you show to God about your enthusiasm. That's like Zrizus. That's like Mitzvah B'Yosim B'Shluvo. But according, and I think Harrison knows this very well, that according to Tosus, he is not focusing at all on how much it costs you. Maybe it costs you more, less, a little bit less, a little bit more. You got a good deal, whatever it is. But it's about the impact. That a mitzvah in its basic form has X impact, and you should spring for X plus one-third X impact as a hitter, which is going to cost you more. Tosfos understands that. And that's why we're discussing it. If it was free, we'd all just go for the biggest thing. We understand that there's expense involved. But it's not calibrated based on the expense. It's calibrated based on the impact. So I think that's what seems to be transmitted in that machlokas, and that's what we're seeing from Harrison. So this question is an interesting one. And it may also perhaps explain a position of the Rambam. And here, you know, we mentioned yesterday that we're in a little bit of a time crunch now towards the end of the semester. So listen carefully to this point, because it will save us time on Monday when we talk about Hanukkah. A lot of this will go much smoother if you're able to draw on what we talk about today. There is a shita of the Rambam that differs from many, many other Rishon. The Gemara says in the Masechta Shabbos on Daf Kuf Lamed Gimel that there is a concept of Hidur Mitzvah that applies to Bris Milah. And the Gemara says that when you're performing a Bris Milah, so then there are the tzitz and hama'akvin asamila, there are the parts which are crucial. If you don't do that, you're missing something absolutely integral to the mitzvah. And then there are the tzitzin she'enam ma'akvin es hamila. There are the tzitzin which do not impact your performance of the bris milah, and it's a hiddur to do them. You should, but they're not ma'akev. So in discussing that, the hiddur part, the Gemara says the hamal, first in the middle of doing a bris milah, kol zman shel pirish, if he's in the middle of that initial cut, right? You saw this Gemara, right? In the middle of that initial cut, so then you should keep going even on the tzitzin she'ena ma'akvin, even on the part that's not crucial to the mitzvah. But if you have already taken your hand away, if you have already stopped doing the cut, so then you're only chozer on tzitzin ha'ma'akvin asamila. You'll only go back and cut more if it is the part that is crucial. So the question is, what are we talking about? Why are you not going to go back for the hiddur too? What's the big deal? So just because you stopped cutting, why shouldn't you go back even for the hiddur? And the Gemara makes this distinction that if you already stopped cutting, then you only go back and cut more if it's for the mitzvah itself and not for the hiddur. Why not? David. Okay, so that's what it sounds like. That's how most of the Rishonim understand. That, the Gemara appears in Masechta Shabbos, right, that we're talking about Milah on Shabbos, and that's the issue. So it's a big chiddush that we do Milah at all on Shabbos. I think we talked about it a little bit in Parshas Lech Lecha this year. So the fact that you do any kind of cutting is a surprise on Shabbos. So if you've already finished and it now involves going back to the cutting, that should only be done for something that's ma'akev mitzvah smila and not for a hiddur. Okay, so that's the view of Rashi and Tosfos, Rama, and the Tur. A number of Rishonim take like this view. However, the exception is the Rambam. The Rambam in Hilchos Mila, in Perek Beis Halacha Daled, I believe, the Rambam writes that you don't go back. And in his presentation, it's a meal at any time. It's a weekday meal. It's not necessarily a Shabbos meal. So why not? Why don't you finish? Just because it's not ma'akev, but we're pro-hidr. So why don't you go back and do the hidr as well? Anyone have any thoughts? Yes, David?
Doesn't feel like it's
Daraisa? Doesn't feel like it's Daraisa. Interesting. What does that mean?
Meaning if it was Daraisa, so then if Hidra was Daraisa, so then go back. But he said, don't go back. So maybe.
Well, that kind of language, it sounds a little bit like you're mixing phrases, forgive me. Because the Gemara sometimes says, oh, let's say I daven Shmon Esrei, and I don't remember if I said something or another. So if it's Daraisa, Salvik Daraisa Chomer, I gotta go back. And if it's Rabbanan, I don't have to go back. They were talking about doing something again out of doubt. Here, there's no doubt. You know what happens. You didn't do the hitter part. So why should I not go back and cut more? Yes?
You say that hitter is found to the actual mitzvah itself.
Okay.
The mitzvah, and then once you in yotzei the mitzvah mitzvah and you separate it from it, then you can't go back just to do the hitter.
Okay. Excellent. So many say like this in the Rambam. And there's two different ways to say it. So just to clarify, and again, please, this will come up in Hanukkah, so try to remember this for that. But some explain, like the Velvel Soloveitchik with the Brisker of the Briz, that the question, the Machlokis Harishonim here, about whether to continue with the Hiddur during the week, is about whether or not, pretty much like Jacob said, does a hiddur have to be connected to the mitzvah? Or can you have a hiddur even separate from the mitzvah? So in that formulation, it comes out that the Rambam says, don't go back, because you can't have a hiddur separate from the mitzvah. Well, all the other Rishonim, who would tell you to go back unless it's Shabbos, they seem to hold that a hiddur and a mitzvah can come separately from each other. Now, the truth is, that's a little bit of a strange formulation. The idea that you can have a hiddur separate from a mitzvah completely is a strange idea. You know, sometimes when we talk about hiddur, sometimes use the mashal icing on the cake. So not to say that it's like having the icing separate from the cake. But people could do that. That could be enjoyable. But it's more like the ketchup on the burger, right? So let's say you have your burger and then you realize there was no ketchup, and then someone brings you the ketchup and you finish the burger, right? So it doesn't make sense to, okay, now I'll swallow some ketchup, right? The whole point was that you're going to have the ketchup with the burger. That would be mahadir the burger. But if the ketchup comes afterwards, there's no hiddur. There's no such thing as having a mitzvah separate. And in fact, here's one of these Gedolim story attribution things. So there's a story they say about Reb Chaim, which may or may not be true about Reb Chaim, but it doesn't matter because it's printed in the tshuvas of his father, of the Beis HaLevi. So you can read it as a tshuva of the Beis HaLevi, or you can take it as a story about Reb Chaim, whatever you prefer. But the case is there that the question was asked to Reb Chaim of the Beis HaLevi, that let's say you have a choice of two esrogim you could use on sukkahs. One esrog, it's a suffix whether it's kosher or not. But should it be kosher, it's very clear that it is mohudr. The other esrog is definitely kosher. But you're not sure if it qualifies as mohudr. So what should you do? How should you handle the situation? What would you recommend? Yes, Jacob?
Take the mahudr one, I'll deny that it's kosher, and then if it's kosher, you go say your mitzvah in the other way, and then take the non-mahudr one after, deny that if the first one was not good, then this one's not
good. Okay, that's very good. Now tell me why you didn't say the other way around.
because if you already were yotzei your mitzvah, as we just said with Mila, you can't then go back and do...
Oh, okay. Excellent. Very good. So that's basically how Reb Chaim the Beis Halevi say that if you were to do the more instinctive move of saying, well, kosher is more important than mehudar, so I'll take the kosher one first, so then that's actually not a perfect plan, it seems, because if it turns out it's mehudar, then good, you got kosher and mehudar. But if it turns out that it's not mehudar, then you're done. And you can't say, okay, I did my mitzvah, and now I'm going to hiddur separately. That's like having the burger and then the ketchup. So you should do it, like Jacob says, the other way around, assuming this isn't a hefsek, by the way, which other achronim discuss. But assuming there's no hefsek problem, so then Jacob's approach seems to be the best, that first take the suffix kosher one, because if it turns out it's kosher, then good, you have kosher and mehudar in one place. And then if not, you'll take up the other one, so then at least you'll get a kosher esro. So it's hard to say that all the other rishonim are saying that a hiddur can be completely disembodied from a mitzvah. So, to say it maybe in a way it's a little bit easier to swallow, is that maybe there's no question that the mitzvah has to be active in some way for the hiddur to be contributed. But how active does it have to be? Do you just have to be in a state of fulfillment? Or is it that the maisa mitzvah has to be done behidr? So do we say that when we do the maisa mitzvah, that has to be done behidr? Or are we saying that no, even if the maisa mitzvah was done without a hidr, but if the mitzvah is still even passively continuing, so then there's room to add on the hidr. So when it comes to Mila, some of you who were here last year might recall, we discussed a view that many have, Rishonim and Achronim, that Bris Mila has two aspects to it. It has the ongoing reality of being circumcised, which is itself a Kiyum HaMitzvah, and it also has the active minute when the Bris is actually taking place. So because the mitzvah is still going to continue forever, so all the other Rishonim could say there's still room to add on the Hiddur, because the mitzvah is still in play. While the Rambam has a more limited take that the hiddur has to be while you are performing the mitzvah. So what could emerge is that the Rambam especially might be reflecting one of our understandings here. Now we could say, what is the din of hiddur? Is the din of hiddur that the mitzvah should be nicely presented? Or is the din of hiddur about how you do mitzvahs? And is it about how you show that the mitzvah is important to you and you display that enthusiasm? So if that's the case, so it could be that what the Rambam is saying is that it's only about the maisa. It's only about how you perform the mitzvah. And therefore, once that's done, it doesn't make sense to come back and to modify it in any way, because the maisa ha-mitzvah is finished. And it's interesting that a number of achronim suggest that if you track the Rambam in general, that the Rambam actually does not seem to record a concept of hiddur mitzvah in the object in general, but rather the idea that you do a mitzvah in a enthusiastic way, in a way that displays commitment. That's how he understands hiddur mitzvah seems throughout. So that's an interesting observation. And it brings up the question in general, is there a concept of hiddur mitzvah that's not about an object, and it maybe could apply even without any objects, but it's just about how a mitzvah is performed? David? So there are some sources, I don't think I remember to put these on the Mar Makomos, but I'll tell them to you now. There are a few possible sources that seem to indicate a concept of hiddur that doesn't have anything to do with any visible objects. So, for example, in the beginning of the 10th parak of Pesachim, on the Tali Testament days, so there the Gemara talks about the idea of not eating on Erev Pesach because of the mitzvah of matzah, which we want to do b'te'avon. We want to do with a good appetite. And Rashi and the Rashbam over there explain that that is a hiddur mitzvah. So one might say, how is that a hiddur mitzvah if no one sees anything? There's no item that's any more glorious than anything else. So where is the hiddur? So it seems like there they're talking about doing a mitzvah in a more perfect way, even if it doesn't involve any nice looking object, that's enough to be called a hiddur. Similarly, there is a Tosus Maseches Brachos and Daf Chaf Aleph. Again, I would recommend that you look at it tomorrow. This Tosus, I do not believe, represents the mainstream halachic approach, but it's an interesting idea that when we talk about Shemei Kahone, which, by the way, a little bit of a preview for next semester, Shemei Kahone is a beautiful sugya which appears in Maseches Sukkah. So God's main source is in Maseches Sukkah. So God willing, next semester, it's very much on our agenda. It's very much in the category of a lot of the sugyas we've been seeing here, these very broad Kol Torah Kula sugyas that emanate from Maseches Sukkah. So Shemei Kahone is very much an example of that. So we generally, lahalacha, take the view that to be yotze through Shemei Kahone is no worse than making a bracha yourself. So, for example, Friday night, we have a table with a lot of people, and men and women are both obligated in Kiddush. But normally, it's generally one person making Kiddush for the whole table, and sometimes for an entire cafeteria. So we don't usually worry about that. We usually assume that, okay, everyone's yotze Shemei Kahone. We don't say that that's b'di'evid. We say that that's the mitzvah. And again, why that is, we can explain. We talk about that in the sugya. But Tosfos and Brachos and Afchav Aleph suggests that it's a hiddur mitzvah to make the bracha yourself rather than hear it from someone else. So here again, you can say, what do you mean it's a hiddur mitzvah? There's no mitzvah object. So why should that be called a hiddur? So again, what seems to be the suggestion? So it seems to be that according to this view in Tosfos, there is such a thing as a hiddur that is in the action, not necessarily in the chatzah. So if you're going to do the mitzvah in a way that is more perfect, that's considered to be a hiddur. Now others would call a concept like that mitzvah min amuvchar. Not necessarily hiddur mitzvah. They would perhaps suggest we have two different concepts here. We have doing a mitzvah in its most perfect form. That's a mitzvah min amuvchar. And to do a mitzvah behidr means to have a nice looking object. But here the Rambam seems to understand that what we call mitzvah min amuvchar is really the same thing as a hiddur mitzvah. So it's also suggested that if you look at the text of the Gemara in Shabbos, the main text about Zakeh Levi Avdehu, so what's the language of the Gemara? So Hisnoi Lefanov B'mitzvus, Asei Lefanov Sukana, Lulavna, Shofarna, Tzitzisna, Sefer Torahna, Uksovo, Lishmo, Vidyona, Bekolmosna. You should write the Sefer Torah Lishmo with nice ink and a nice pen. So some ask, nice pen? How does that translate into Hiddur Mitzvah? So some say, well, a nice pen makes nicer writing, and that's what it means. But others suggest that, no, a nice pen is a greater emphasis on how the mitzvah is being done, on the performance of the mitzvah, and that's what we're talking about, and that's consistent with this whole understanding within the Rambam. So there's a lot to say about these inyonim, but again, just to call our attention to some of the general issues and the general frameworks that could be relevant. So it's also important to note, if you had a chance to see, that Hidra Mitzvah plays an even bigger role in Hilchos Lulav and Esrog, as is conveyed in the beginning of the third parak, Lulav HaGazel, the Hayavish Pasul. So if you have a lulav that is stolen, that's no good. That's not our topic for today. But a yavesh, if it's dried out, that's also a problem. It's puzzle. It's no good. A lulav that's dried out is no good. So what is the reason for that? So Rashi over here says, Devoina and mitzvah mehuderes. Because you need a mitzvah that is mohuder. Dechsiv v'anvehu. It quotes this general din of v'anvehu. So Tosfos disagrees with this. Right? Tosfos says, first Tosfos on the page, so Tosfos says the reason the lulav v'yavesh is no good, it quotes the Gemara, mishum de'iskish lulav v'esrog, because we look to the esrog as the source for this din. And what does it say in the esrog? Dechsiv be'y, Hadar, pre eight hadar. For lo kamo shapirish, our contrast, not like Rashi, mishum dechsiv, zekeli vi anvehu. De ein ave anvehu, ela lichad chila, velo mifsul bahachi. Anvehu was only a din lichad chila, a lulav would not be called pasul without it. Kidnamuchach parakama, like we see from our first parak, Yidalf, which we mentioned, where we find by eged, lulav mitzvah, ogdo, mishum zekeli vi anvehu. But lo ogdo kosher, if you don't do it, so then it's no good. So you see, Tosfos disagrees with Rashi and says that keli v'anvehu cannot be the source for a din of lulav hayavish pasul, because v'anvehu is a din l'chechila. It's not a din b'di'evit. So if it's going to be, if you want to say that yavshus is a problem in Hidr, it could be, Tosfos is saying, he's not denying that the problem might be a lack of Hidr. But he's saying you can't base it on Zekei Levi Anvehu, because that seems to be a different level of Ikuv, it's not Ma'akev. And the source for this is because Esrog is defined through Hadar, and Lulav has a Hekish to Esrog, so therefore in those cases, Lulav and Esrog are absolutely contingent on being Hadar. So that's the way Tosfos relates to it, that we have a different pasuk, a different source for the same din, basically a lack of Hidr, but a different pasuk. The Ravid is quoted, an interesting Ravid on this concept. The Ravid says the reason that a lulav hayavish is pasul is because of a different pasuk. You know which one that is? Lo hamesim mihaluka. Right? You can't praise God with dead lulavs. Lo hamesim mihaluka. So how are you going to use lulav to mahal God if it's all dried out, if it's dead? So that's the source. But here Tosfos is agreeing that it could be from Hidr reasons, but a different pasuk that makes Hidr crucial. How else could you explain Rashi if you want to say that it's a general Hidr, but how come here it's pasul and in other applications such as Eged it's not a question of pasul or kosher? So some suggest that there's a difference between active and negative, or positive and negative Hidr. That it's one thing to say, if you have a baseline mitzvah, so then, to make it nicer, that's something which we could take or leave, so to speak. We want you to take it, but if you don't have it, it's still good. But if we're dipping below the baseline, we're saying that it's not that it's not a beautiful lulav. It's an ugly lulav. If it's mamish negative hidra points, so then maybe that is a posel. That's how some explain. That there's a difference between having an active hidr, which is not ma'akev, and having negative hidr, which maybe is ma'akev. Now, does that still work? Does that explain any better how you could have two different levels from one posel? Maybe, maybe not. But that's how some suggest you could explain the Rashi over here as drawing a distinction between Eged and Lulav Hayavish. Okay, so there's a lot more to say about this. I just want to add one more point, because this was on the Marmar Kumbos also, just to be aware of it, that the general attitude that we have by Hiddur, with the exception of this din, is that we see that Hiddur is generally treated as icing on the cake, is treated as an add-on. It's not something which comes to define the mitzvah itself. It's not something which, if you're missing it, the mitzvah is disqualified. That's why Tosfos raises this question here. It generally doesn't have that kind of an impact. So one question is, how do you understand the Gemara in Maseches Menachos on Daf Samach Daled? And there the Gemara talks about, if you saw the Gemara, I think it was on the end of the Marmar Kumbos list, that let's say you have a korban that's Docha Shabbos. You have a korban that is a korban sibur, shezmano kavua. So that can take place, does take place on Shabbos. So let's say they've already shechted the animal used for this purpose. And then they realize that there's a better choice, a more mohuder animal, basically a fatter animal. Whereas the shachar is a chusha, but they found that after a shmeina, they found a bigger animal that they could have been using. So the Gemara says that they shecht that one now on Shabbos to replace it. So that's surprising, because what you're basically saying is this justifies another act of shechita on Shabbos, which is a melacha. But the need to have the best korban, a halacha of hiddur, that justifies shechting on Shabbos a second time. So everyone asks on this, how does that work? Right? If this is just for the purposes of hiddur, how does that justify doing an extra malacha on Shabbos? There's a creative approach in the Chuvas Imre Osher, where he says that there's a technical problem here, that the person who shechted the animal was a shliach on behalf of the tzibur. He was a representative of the whole congregation, the whole community. And if a shliach is mishaneh mishlichuso, then it doesn't take effect. If the shliach deviates from his mission, then it's no good. And here, the assumption is, his mission was, find the best animal available and shecht that one. So since he didn't fulfill his mission properly, so then maybe the whole shlichus isn't effective, and now he's back to square one. He still has this need to find an appropriate animal for the carbon. Okay, that's a possibility. But there are others who explain that maybe when it comes to korbanos, we have a whole different concept that's in effect here. Maybe that's the issue. It has to do with the fact that this is kachim. So with mitzvahs in general, we have the notion of zekeli v'yandei. But when talking about kachim, so there's also the notion of mimivchar nidracha, that the korbanos should be brought from the best of what you have. And therefore, maybe that is more ma'akid than normal hidden mitzvah. That's something which goes to the concept itself, and therefore, maybe we don't have to explain why it's treated with greater severity than hidder in general. Okay, so hopefully this is a decent introduction to the general concepts of hidder. Our next step is then to consider just the effect that hiddur has on Chanukah, which we will try to do next time. We'll see, maybe if there's time tomorrow, partial. We'll see, probably be on Monday, but we'll see. Harrison? Okay, just to quickly recap what we spoke about. So we spoke about the machlokas, Rashi and Tosfos and Bava Kamma, about what adding on a third means, whether it means more money or more size. And we suggested that that reflects question whether hiddur is about how much you put into it or about the overall impact. And then we talked also about the question of Gemara in Masechta Shabbos, that you should not go back for a hiddur, and most Rishonim saying that's because it's Shabbos, but the Rambam saying even during the week you don't go back, and we tried to figure out why that is. And some suggest that it's a machlok is about whether you can have a hiddur separate from the mitzvah. The Rambam says no, everyone else says yes. And then we discussed that that's actually hard to believe, that you can really have a hiddur completely separate from the mitzvah, like ketchup completely separate from the burger. So presumably what it means is that everyone agrees the mitzvah has to be ongoing on some level. The question is, does it have to also be active? Is the maisa mitzvah still happening? And that maybe the Rambam in particular has an understanding of hiddur as how you do the mitzvah rather than a specific mitzvah object. And it's in line with a few other views in Rishonim, such as Rashi and the Rashbam and Pesachim, that eating a matzah b'teovon is considered a heder, and the Tosfos and Brachos, that making a bracha yourself is considered to be a heder. Then we considered the machlokas Rashi and Tosfos in the third paragraph of Sukkah, about Rashi saying that Lul Hayavish is no good because of Zekeli Verveyu, and Tosfos says heder might be the issue, but it can't be Zekeli Verveyu, because we see that's not ma'ake from the first paragraph about Lul Sarach Eger, or Lul Mitzvah L'Ogdo, more appropriately put. And Tosfos says that the issue is we have a separate pasuk of creates hadar for esrog, which has got a hekesh teluv, and that's why it's ma'akev in this case. And we mentioned the other possibilities, the ravid that teluv hayavish is no good because of lo hames mi'aluka, and that also maybe Rashi could hold it's ma'akev because even if a lack of positive hidr is not ma'akev, but the presence of negative aspect to the anti-hitter, that perhaps is ma'akev, is posel. And then we talk about the Gemara Menachos, which seems to imply that we would do shechita on Shabbos just for the purposes of a hitter, and how some explain this because the whole shlichus was retroactively shown to be no good. Or we mentioned the other approach that some have, Rabbi Warman has this in a sefer, that the din here is not zekeli manveyu, but rather it is Mimivchar Nidracha. Okay, we will Hidav Mincha now. Just to mention that Hidav Mincha has something in mind that I believe that in the Lakewood Yeshiva, Hidav Mincha every day.